on my left back row.
Good morning, Kevin Marlin, member of the Mineral Resources and Energy Committee.
Good morning, I am Honorable Malinga, member of DMRE Portfolio Committee.
Good morning, my name is Matthew Wolmerans, I'm a member of the Minerals Resources and Energy Committee.
Disadvantage that we know because we're introducing ourselves later. I'm Mr. Luzipho, the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Minerals and Energy. The chair said I must welcome, and unfortunately I could not be welcomed as an invited person to the meeting. So I am definitely sure he had opened the meeting, and we will take it from there, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, my co-chair, Honorable Zipo. From our office, we did not receive any apologies. I may just open this space if there are any apologies, either from the Portfolio Committee of Mineral Resources and Energy or any of the other members from the Department of Health. Any apologies?
Good morning, members and the guests. I've got apology from Mrs. Phillips and Mr. Kola, both are from Minerals and Mineral Resources and Energy.
From our side, we note an absence of one of our members. I don't know whether she's late, Honorable Kwahube. Maybe she has other engagements, but at least there is representation. I notice another member joining us this side and two others that side. Can you introduce yourself there?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Nick Lissou from the Minerals Council.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Nick Lissou from the Minerals Council.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members. My name is Samuel Aouti, Deputy Commissioner from the Compensation Commissioner.
Good morning, I'm from the PMG.
We don't know what is PMG.
Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
We go down there with a new member, Mr. Honorable Chira, also who joined us late.
Good morning, Chair, honorable members and everyone. My name is Meshack Masangani from National Department of Health, CCOD.
Thank you very much, my co-chair. I would have loved that you would listen to the presentations and note areas that you like clarity on or where we are going to ask questions and allow them to flow with their presentation. And then I'm aware that they will do three components. I don't know whether they will allow, don't know how long. I wanted them to give us what they have here together with this process of the compensation, and maybe we can pause there before the APP and see if we can, because the APP is clarity seeking question, that's your plan, and not really bring it to what we would like to hear more. I said in my opening remarks, Honorable Chair and the members who have just joined us, it's a very remarkable presentation that we are going to get. It actually is saying it might have come in at a time, maybe late for somebody, but I'm glad that among other things when I was reading there, it says, what do we do with dependents of a deceased member? Yeah. Something comes in there. And why it didn't happen 20 years ago, we may just think about that, but now it is happening. Maybe the process to embrace it and move on with it and see what can be done. To me, it sounded very humbling to listen to this presentation. So it is in that regard, Dr. Perry Krishnaswamy, we allow you to make a presentation. on this process. Thank you very much. Because of Biscope, but there are other copies that also were distributed to us. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and Co-Chair and honourable members. We thought we'd, because it's a, some members are new, we thought it prudent to give a background to compensation issues, social protection issues in South Africa, and then particularly that affecting the workers in mines and work. And then go on to the class action settlement, which is a historic, which is an historic for the mining industry worldwide, the 5 billion rand class action settlement. And then probably take questions on this part of the portfolio, and then the APP, as you probably say, Chair, because maybe members of the other portfolio committee may not, I mean, they may intervene or whatever it is. I think people, in terms of time constraints, how much time have you allowed us so that I can just structure my presentation, Chair?
By 11:30, you must have left this room.
Thank you, Chair. That's a directive. Okay, so I'm going to quickly give you the context, some of the macro issues affecting workers in the mining sector in South Africa, compensation and services, and just to acknowledge in the room that unfortunately the trade unions couldn't join us in the mining sector, but we do have colleagues that have come from the mining companies, and particularly the Minerals Council of South Africa. So the first issue is that unfortunately we have a fragmented system in South Africa affecting health, compensation and social protection. In a typical model worldwide, social protection, these are, so we have social assistance, and I do apologize to members who know deeper about this, also in like the Portfolio Committee on Social Development. Social assistance is for the poor, where we provide the SASSA grants and poverty alleviation programs, the free water services, basic services, etc. Social protection is normally the remit of a Department of Employment and Labour or Department of Labour. So it's an anomaly that both occupational health, the prevention side, occupational health and safety, and compensation is sitting between three major departments: that health, employment and labour, mineral resources and energy. So that's a policy vacuum that has to be resolved at some stage, in line with the 1999 Cabinet Resolution of integrating the prevention programs of occupational health and safety and the compensation systems in terms of the process. But we could revisit that at a later stage, depending, Chairperson's, in terms of bringing your three committees together in terms of this process. The second major issue, sorry, there are other minor groupings like civil aviation, Department of Transport, that covers health and safety in the civil aviation industry. Maritime health and safety is Department of Transport. So those are minor issues that the thing. Department of Defense, of course, is not covered by any occupational health and safety legislation. They have their own processes. So a worker who gets injured in a defense establishment is covered under completely different laws, including NIA, for example. So those are issues that are wider than this committee's thing. The second major issue is South Africa was built on a concept called migrant labor, which continues today, and I'll give you some slides on that in terms of process. And of course, there's been the big issue about contract labor and within and cross borders. And the last issue is the formal informal economy. And again, we'll listen. So this has been the nexus of how workers work in South Africa. And the bulk of our legislation covers formal sector workers in the country. So we don't talk about the street traders, the minibus taxi drivers, etc., what we are calling the so-called euphemistically the informal economy. Then service delivery. Like you have a health system that provides primary health care, secondary health care, hospitals. In the private sector, you have specialist doctors, specialist hospitals, etc. We have a very fragmented system for workers. So mining companies provide services for workers, manufacturing, and some of it might be outsourced, a general practitioner coming and rendering services at a motor plant, etc. So these are things, so it's a fragmented, so you don't have a unified framework in which these things work, and it's something that we have to work for. And very important, it brings together diverse stakeholders. So a typical model in a health system is the consumer, the patient, and the provider, either public or private sector. In our case, occupational health situates itself within government, trade unions, employer groupings, and of course, in our case, neighboring country governments, because of the nature of the migrant labor system. So this is the history of South Africa. 1920, one in two people that worked in the mining sector came from, were non-South Africans. And then currently we're probably running at about 1 in 3 in terms of the process of labor market economy in terms of the process. So 1 in 3 being non-South Africans. Of course, we had the difficult past of the so-called homelands, TBVC. So, you know, those things actually gave us where we had actually passports, where people came from Transkei to go and work in Carltonville, etc. In terms of occupational laws, this is where I told you about the policy framework that we have over the fragmentation. So these are the prevention laws. If these prevention laws worked, we would not be having silicosis today. We would not be having pneumoconiosis today. We would not be having workers dying and being maimed in the thing. So the key area is that these are the prevention laws, and I'm glad the co-chair is here, because that's the Portfolio Committee on Oversight Mineral Resources, and of course we don't have labor here, because those are the two occupational laws that are run by the two departments. So Mine Health and Safety Act covers mine workers, and the Occupational Health and Safety Act covers all workers other than mine workers. These are the two social protection laws, compensation laws. Occupational Disease and Mines and Works Act, which is the purpose of today's presentation on the annual performance plan, is Department of Health, hence we have our portfolio committee through the leadership of Dr. Lomo. And then the QIDA, Compensation for Occupational Injuries and Disease, Department of Labor. The travesty of justice is that workers don't understand that for hearts and lungs, they've got to come to Minister Mkhize, and for hips and arms, they've got to go to Minister in Employment and Labor. Right, and so workers don't understand these things on the ground, and that's been part of the problems, and then we've got the issues around the funding values. And then there's also two licensed agencies in the Department of Employment and Labor, Rand Mutual, which covers mine workers for injuries and all diseases other than occupational lung diseases, and the Federated Employees Mutual, which covers workers in the construction industry. So these are licensed agencies, and I don't know if there are members here who have crossed portfolio committees, but you might want a presentation later on in terms of some of these issues that face us, and we have very little data. Now the key area is that these two laws cover workers in the formal economy, except for domestic workers. Domestic workers, fortunately, South Africa led the process internationally at the ILO, International Labour Organization in Geneva, to bring domestic workers into it. So that's only the one sector that's actually come in, who are now covered by this legislation and also compared by, you know, get things like compensation, etc. But street traders, hawkers, minibus taxi drivers, etc. are not covered by this legislation. So this is the workforce in South Africa that I was leading on to in terms of the context, Chairperson. So we have 36 million of working age, and as you go down the line, you can see the Department of Labor coverage of 11 million formal sector workers, and you can see our legislation covering the 400,000 current mine workers, and I'll talk in a minute about the ex-mine workers. Now, the critical area is this is the database of mines and quarries, the 1,000 plus minus 1,600, 1,700 licensed facilities in South Africa. The 236 active controlled mines is what falls under my jurisdiction. So we have cross jurisdiction over the 236, but overall there's approximately another 1,400 that are strictly under the jurisdiction of DME. So what are some of the problems and issues that as we went up this pathway? The first issue is that we don't have a proper database of workers in South Africa, even in the formal sector. So it's something to be taken up. You're sitting with a database in UIF, Unemployment Insurance Fund. You're sitting in a database of Rand Mutual. You're sitting in a database of the Department of Health. So we do need a consolidated database that we actually have to put together. Because I'll tell you later on about the problems about occupational diseases and the latency and the time it takes. And then the wider issues about permanent and contract workers, turnover, retrenchments, etc. Tracking and tracing. Given the history of migrant labor, many of the workers have gone back to Shashai, Amzumkulu, Bizana, Mafeteng in Lesotho, etc. So it's hard to find them and input. So the records of service were impossible. We're glad that TEBA is in the room, the recruitment agency for the mining industry for a long time. We had difficulties with TEBA historically, which kept the mine workers' records, but we've now overcome that issue in a joint partnership with TEBA and the Minerals Council of South Africa. And very important, a surveillance system. This is not intelligence gathering, it's intelligence gathering for health benefits. You have to follow up workers in terms of actually working out what disease they get. So let's give you the example. We fortunately have a system in the Department of Health to follow up mine workers. Therefore, we can work out that they get silicosis, coal workers, pneumoconiosis, etc. These diseases come 10 to 20 years after somebody leaves the system. But a farm worker who sprays pesticides will in 20 years later have liver failure because of inhaling pesticides. But the QIDA law under the Department of Employment Labor doesn't have a follow-up system for following up farm workers. The diesel motor mechanic who is being exposed to diesel particulate emissions and will get lung cancer is not covered in terms of this process. So this is something that we have to work through. So occupational ILAS is hard to get the data. So it's something, Chairperson, that you could be calling for under the new National Health Information System that we actually, and NAPISA, the National Public Health Institute, that we have to get data on occupational injuries and data. If we get data, it's mainly what I call incidence data because we don't have the denominator base. Incidence data says number of workers who died in a fatal accident in the mine. But I can't say that mine A has got more fatal injuries than mine B if I don't know what the numbers of workers exposed. So if 10 workers die in mine A and 20 workers die in mine B, if I did not know that it was 10 out of 100 and 20 out of 200, then it's an equal fatality rate. So that's the concept here called incidence and denominators. So occupational injuries, if I trip and fall now, touch wood, then you can follow me up immediately, Chairperson, and get me sorted out, and I'm covered under public sector rules, and you know, I'll be managed in terms of that. But diseases take a long time to develop. It needs special investigations. It needs special doctors called occupational medicine practitioners. It takes a long time, and then we also have overlapping processes. So this is the disease process in mine workers. So you can see this is a healthy tissue, healthy lung tissue. These are post-mortem specimens. This is healthy tissue in a 90-year-old school teacher who's never smoked. You can see one speck here at the bottom. And this is a 40-year-old mine worker where half the lung has been eaten up by this lung disease, the dust diseases, in terms of the process. These are the people that built the economy of South Africa, but unfortunately landed up with collateral damage in terms of the process, not a collateral benefit. And that's what we are trying to write in terms of this process, the X number of workers that worked on it. We run an act that has a 107-year history. It's the Miners' Crisis Act. And it's now called ODUMWA, Occupational Disease in Mines and Works Act. The tragedy of justice is from 1912 to 1973, it covered mainly white mine workers, 80,000 white mine workers in South Africa. The Durban strikes in 1973 brought in black workers into collective bargaining rights, the Bian Commission. Then the trade unions could, I mean, there were trade unions working on black workers, but they were banned in the 60s along the general banning orders. So the resurgence of trade unionism came in post-1973. That's when black workers were brought in. And that then brought in 1.6 million mine workers into the system. And the system, this system that we run today, Chairperson, collapsed in 1973. And that's a fundamental travesty of justice of how government failed our people in terms of the process. Well, government together with its partners that should have actually delivered a better system for our people. So here's occupational disease in mining workers. This is the gold mining industry. It's a legacy of 120 years. Remember, diamonds were discovered in 1867 and 10 years later gold. That changed the face of South Africa's economy. We, mining sector contributes about 20%, and we're glad this co-chairperson is here in terms of this. I'm sure he picks up these data especially in his committee. South Africa's mineral wealth is valued at 25 trillion rands. That's the wealth in the ground. Australia and Russia come a distant second. So oil and gas is slightly different. This is mineral wealth. There's only three things we don't get from the ground: oil, water, and bauxite. Bauxite is for aluminium. So that's where this is. But every other mineral is here, and I'll show you a figure on that. Unfortunately, the workers that built this wealth never benefited from it. In the 1970s, 1 rand equaled $2 because you had the Vietnam War, you had crises, and gold was then used as bullion reserve as opposed to dollars or euros or renminbi. And unfortunately, we had a deadly cocktail of HIV, TB, and silicosis. Now, mining unfortunately has declined in South Africa in many ways. South Africa is now eight in the world in terms of gold production. This is the latest data. But as I pointed out, we still have 90% of the world's platinum group reserves. I apologize to members of the Minerals, Resource and Energy Committee because you might know this data, but just to let you know. 70% of manganese, 60% of chrome, etc. So that's the point I was making, that we still, this is still in the ground, and how do we turn this around? So Chairperson, where did we come from with this collapse of the system? This is what I inherited when Minister Motsoaledi brought me in with Dr. Mitrali, Dr. Rabada, the Deputy Commissioner is here, and the Director of Finance. When we came in 1912, We inherited a building that collapsed. 2012. 1912 was the act. But maybe a previous life chapter. So in Indian mythology, there's reincarnation. So maybe in the previous life, I ran 2012. 2012, Department of Health, the building in downtown Johannesburg, the tiles are falling, and hopefully it doesn't fall on the patient. The lifts don't work. There was one room of files. Each file here represents a pain. When I showed this to ex-mine workers in Ramzumkulu, Bizana, Mafeteng, they cried. The telephones don't work. This is the difficulty we have in terms of public works building, infrastructure, and the delivery system that we need to put together. We reorganized the system, and we now have a state-of-the-art database that we can electronically, under a tree in Bizana, actually pick up the fingerprints, etc., etc. And I'll show you some of the reforms we did. But this is why I told you that in 73 the system collapsed and denied our people the right for it. Compensation is the last resort. We should be doing more on prevention. But this also failed our people in terms of working. So I gave you this example of silicosis and the problems. It's a clinical diagnostic tool we use of chest X-rays. That's what Dr. Rabada and Dr. Michali do, a certification committee doctors, a special panel of doctors that actually overview this. So that's why I told you that if I slip and fall now, you can work out my leg is paining. But this is a slow death over 20 years. There's dust diseases that are slowly collapsing the lungs. Remember the dust, the lungs are like balloons with air pockets? This is concretizing the lungs over time. So an old ex-mine worker thinks it's old age when he's getting shortness of breath, not knowing that he's got this problem inside his lungs where the dust are eating him up. Did we know? The fact that we set up a compensation act in 1912 said that we did know there was a problem. But South Africa was leading the world in mining. 1930, we had the first international silicosis conference. Male and pale, sorry, I'm just this thing. 1959, Great Hall of Wits. One white female made it into the system. The second, this is the pneumoconiosis. Silicosis, I mean, these are dust diseases in terms of the process. So we knew there was a problem, but did we do anything about it? So this is what we inherited for the previous portfolio committees. In 10-11, there were 6 years of disclaimers on the audited reports to this committee, August committee. Your previous committee chair asked that the previous commissioner be fired and the DG would be taken to court. And hence, there were some changes. We couldn't find 30% of source documents. Well, you saw the one room I showed you of files. How does the Auditor General go in and pick up source documents? They were quite happy to have for 5% problems, you know, 95% confidence intervals, we call it. But when you can't find 30% of source documents and the rest of the problems that we had. Contestation, we're going to talk about the class action. This is a significant issue. Our law allowed mine owners to be sued. So we had, the first issue was asbestos, mainly covering the Northern Cape into Limpopo, Penj, Kuruman, Prieska, etc. There was a belt where the asbestos. And this was the first major settlement in 2003 for workers in the asbestos industry. Fortunately, we banned asbestos now, both manufacturing and mining in South Africa. 2013, Rebecca Trust, we had the settlement. So the asbestos settlement was around $450 million. The Quebec Trust, Anglo Gold, Asante Anglo American was about $500 million. And then the most recent now is the $5 billion settlement, which Komotso will talk to us later on after my presentation in bringing you all up to speed with the $5 billion settlement. Unfortunately, Mr. Makaya died 2 weeks before his constitutional court judgment that led ultimately to the class action. 2 weeks before that, because the mining industry was holding back. And fortunately, today we've turned the corner with the mining industry under the leadership of colleagues like Mr. Abri van Vieren from Harmony, where we said, let's get a new model regeneration, a new approach under Mr. Nicholas Sufi from the Minerals Council about how do we actually turn around this corner, that our people are dying. Yes, it's ravages of the past. How can we actually get it forward? So what we did, Chairperson, in terms of the CCOD, MBOD, firstly, we developed the evidence base. What is the problem? What's the diagnostics? We built a consensus and approach of working together. We can deliver better life. And lastly, we want to come back to this committee about the amendments to Occupational Diseases and Mines and Works Act, which is how do we actually take workers into the Department of Employment and Labor. So you can see gold was the bulk of our certifications. Remember I told you about the panel of doctors and you can see platinum, etc. These are outdated figures, but you know, that's the payment status. We discovered there were 103 claimants that were certified but not paid, amounting to 1.2 billion rands. So that's where we discovered this whole issue of unclaimed benefits and unclaimed payments. And we did work with some of the colleague honorable members where we did work in Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, etc., to track people. We found out where are our people. 300,000 ex-mine workers in the Eastern Cape. And physically, members around this table have been to Bizana, Amzimkulu, taking those windy cares. And I'll show you later on how we've taken services there. In terms of Lesotho, 200,000 ex-mine workers in Lesotho. So in terms of the numbers game, 300,000 ex-mine workers in Eastern Cape, 200,000 ex-mine workers in Lesotho, 150,000 ex-mine workers in Mozambique. Remember the history of migrant labor? And many people have actually gone back in terms of these places. And this is the disease burden. 33,000 workers certified with silicosis, 108,000 certified with TB. This is a 30-year disease burden. Chairperson, a similar committee to yours sat in Australia in 2016 with 18 cases of coal workers' pneumoconiosis. Your committee should read that Senate inquiry. Remember, Australia is a federal country. The coal mines are in Brisbane, in Queensland. But this was a Senate inquiry on 18 cases of coal workers' pneumoconiosis. Look at these data over 30 years. Yes, there's technology advances. It's more technology intensive as opposed to labor intensive. But if Australia could have this kind of dynamic, this is a crisis that we have where we've got 200,000 workers certified with preventable problems. Remember, occupational health is a preventive discipline. What's the problem with this? Chairperson, I'm glad you're here from the Department of Mineral and Energy. There's a concept that we have called occupational exposure limit, the speed limit. You know, 80 kilometers, 60 kilometers, 120. This is the speed limit for exposures to workers for silica dust. South Africa is 0.1 milligram per cubic meter. Commissioned research in 2003, Gavin Churchard, by the forerunner to the Mine Health and Safety Council, said that 0.05 is not protective for workers in the mining industry, half the limit. We now have a milestone which says by 2024, we will bring it to 0.05. Chairperson, workers in British Columbia have weaker lungs. You know that, because they can only tolerate one quarter of workers in South Africa. But that's not true. Physiologically, we don't have weaker lungs and stronger lungs. We have lungs. In South Africa, that's why we've landed up with these kind of problems. There's the 0.1 milligram per cubic meter commissioned research by our own statutory bodies. We don't even follow that commissioned research. TB in the mining sector, and previously Minister Motsoaledi was pushing quite heavy on this process about TB in the mining sector and the difficulties. Yes, we've turned the corner, the numbers are coming down, and we thank God for the processes that we've actually put together with the mining industry, etc. There's a senior leadership now of the Minerals Council that's taking forward the TB in the mining sector. But this tells you that mine workers with HIV and silicosis are 18 times the risk, hence our epidemic. And when I came in 2009 to head the National Institute, that's the first issue I raised with the policymakers, Jorgen Pille, at the National Department of Health, that we've got a major crisis in mining, which Minister Motsoaledi took up. This is the claimant process. It's very long, complicated. The system works against our people. One of the amendments we want to do is how to make this simple, simplify. Remember, the system was geared towards 80,000 white mine workers with identity documents, tracking and tracing, Velcom, Vidbank, etc. It never took into account you have to go to Shashai, Dr. Kisnasamy, and provide services in Amzimkulu, Dr. Kisnasamy, and go to Malawi. There's also ex-mine workers in Malawi. By the way, there's also ex-mine workers in Poland. So the innovations, I'm going to, because of time constraints, we've done a series of innovations in terms of taking it forward, and that will tell you we've got a proper database with the support. So over the last 3 years, the mining industry have provided about 300 million rand worth of kind money. Technical resources, chartered accountants, etc. Remember I told you about the disclaimers, annual reports. And when I talk about the APP, we actually turned the corner to move from a disclaimer to a qualification on revenue. And if we get a proper link between us and DME, then we can sort out, the DME gives the licenses and health picks up the problems. And Auditor General has said, can you sort out this register that we know what we are tackling? And we probably appeal to the committee chairperson to help us with that process. So we went through a very few things. We have now the fourth industrial revolution. We have embraced it, as the president has said. So we'll show you our computer-aided diagnostics are going to help us with x-rays in the field in Shashai and Amzumkulu. Cross-border delivery of services, the so-called one-stop service centers. We've used unemployed graduates, children of mine workers for last mile tracking and tracing. We've linked to financial services. We can't pay like Sasa cash, but we've taken banking services to our people. I'm going to give you an example of that. And lastly, multi-stakeholder involvement, trade unions, ex-mine worker associations, neighboring country governments, etc., that we worked with. So this is tracking and tracing. So see this code here, like your number plate, which you can remember? So we're working with TomTom RiskEdge. TomTom, you know TomTom and Garmin, the GPS? So TomTom has mapped out 3/4 of Africa. So this is a rural village that's been mapped out. And basically by putting this into your code, your cell phone, your GPS, you can go physically straight to that site in a rural village. So we're the thing. So that's then linked to registration, where with smartphones, you take a photograph of your ID, photograph of your face, and your gait or something. It need not be your heart or whatever it is. And we can then, there's this number. You see the number? It automatically triangulates it in terms of the process. And we can do this in Amzumkulu, Shashai, Mafeking, etc. It's going to make changes for things like ambulance services, because you don't have to explain anymore. You know, where the river turns the bend and the houses collapse and the trees burnt. You know, when we're phoning the ambulance services. Because you can actually say these are the codes because they've done this process. This is the information technology system that's the backbone of the system. And there's a range of stuff that we're putting in. This has been funded by the mining industry, and this is going to be the electronic system from end to end, almost like the e-filing in SARS. Computer-aided diagnostics. You can see the mobile truck with solar panels. We don't need generators. There's an x-ray unit within it. And we've got software that can read the x-ray before even the client changes his clothes, you know, from taking the x-ray. The computer-aided diagnostic will tell you whether it's normal or abnormal or TB. This is now, we've proven the field process, and we're taking that forward, Chairperson. One-stop service centers. Previously, people had to come to Johannesburg for services. We set up the first one in Amtata. We've had some difficulties in terms of the process. But generally they are functional. Carltonville, Northern Cape, Kuruman, Bergersport, these are one-stop service centers. And then 10 one-stop service centers in the neighboring countries, two in Mozambique, two in Lesotho, two in Swaziland, one in Botswana, etc. And then mobile units. So this is Amtata, April 2014, Mafeking, Bergersport. Banking services. We ask the banks to come with us because it's very difficult to tell a 70-year-old, you've got a problem, can you go to Matatiel town? And then open a bank account. Have you ever worked out, by the way, how to fika somebody in a rural village? You know fika and rika? Mm-hmm. Anyway, we've actually cracked that as well in terms of working with banking association in South Africa. This is Matatiel. 20% of people came through Quokka's Neck. It's you know close to the border with the Lesotho. And there's the computer. A colleague of mine is actually looking up the person in the field. From that problems we had of a collapsed system, we could now physically check and move this forward. This is Swaziland. Here's our truck. Here's a nurse taking heights and weights because we did that for the lung function test, etc. In Swaziland. Yes, unfortunately, our people, fortunately, the weather helps, but we need to get much more dignity as our people wait in the queue. Malawi. We discovered that 800 people waited 5 hours waiting for the social benefits from South Africa. Pension funds, provident funds, UIF, etc. 2,000. They walked miles looking for their money. Angola. We've mapped the mines. We've mapped the routes because this will help us where we can do technical intervention and also the neighboring country. You can see the whole of Lesotho is almost is a labor sending area. We mapped the flow of money. If we paid out unpaid claimants in Eastern Cape, you know the 1.2 billion? 500 million goes into the Eastern Cape. 300 million goes into Lesotho. These are the turnaround. We paid out 600 million rand over the last 3 years to 20,000 claimants. One third in the Eastern Cape, one third in Lesotho and Mozambique. Okay, so the legal amendments. I'm going to now hand over the class action settlement chairperson to Komotso, who is leading the gold working group on the settlement. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Berry, and good morning to the committee members, and thank you to the chairperson and the deputy chairperson. My name is Komotso Malibazi. I'm a member of the gold working group. As I think Dr. Berry has indicated in part of his presentation, the gold mining companies, and I think together with the attorneys, are quite excited about this settlement. It is not a perfect solution, but it is a step in the right direction, and I think, you know, it is quite important for the committee members to understand that. The gold working group is primarily constituted by six gold mining companies, which are African Rainbow Minerals, Anglo Gold, Ashanti, Anglo American South Africa, Sibanye Stillwater, mm-hmm. Harmony, and Goldfields. By now, I'm sure that some of the committee members might have read about some of the terms of the settlement in the media. So I'm really going to give the salient points of what the settlement really constitutes of.
Madam Khomot, are you speaking to this slide, or you, I see members are getting
confused.
What are you speaking on? A very important contribution, but we don't have what you are talking to.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will try and follow the slides. I had actually made my own talking points, but I will follow the slides. Now, getting into the meat of the terms of the settlement, before I go to this slide, I think I need to give a bit of context in that the classes were certified by the High Court, and after certification, one of the terms of the certification judgment was that the parties would need to go back to the High Court for the settlement agreement to be certified if there was going to be any agreed settlement outside of the court processes. And as you will note in bullet point number one, the certified class starts from 1965 to current, which covers both ex-mine workers and current mine workers. And the two classes of silicosis and TB are the classes that were certified by the High Court. Very slightly confusing me. I don't want to lose the committee members, but yeah. And the two classes are what were certified, and the process being that there was an interim judgment that was given in the settlement agreement essentially was signed in May 2018. The settlement agreement went to court in December 2018 for an interim approval by the court, and the court then gave a directive to say even though there was an interim approval, there would need to be follow-up for final approval after a six-month period, which was followed by extensive media coverage so that any interested and affected parties would appear before the court to give reason and cause why the settlement shouldn't have been made final. And indeed, 26th of July 2019, the court gave us final approval for the settlement agreement with no opposition from any of the parties. The terms of the settlement are that it will be, the benefits will be facilitated by means of a trust, which will be named the Tiamiso Trust, as some of the community members might have picked up in the media.
Is it not maybe time that you distribute these ones? Because when I read through, I am privileged to have had this copy, and I think Khomotso is going through this part. It's not seen on your slide. So I would want that... We'll prioritize honorable members first for now, because I'm helping you, Khomotso, because what you have said to me looks like it's here. It's probably not covered well in your slides, but go through with this one in whatever order you, because you are highlighting this document, which is a very important document to us.
Thank you, Chairperson. The TMISO Trust, TMISO, which is a Setswana word, which means to make right or to correct.
Sorry, Chair, we don't have copies. Sorry, we don't have this copy. There is only one that share among the three.
The number of members vis-a-vis the copies they brought. So we will share for now, but we'll have all members getting all the copies so that the meeting can continue over Manjaya.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The trust essentially will be comprised of 10 classes with the benefits of between the classes ranging between 10,000 and 250,000. This will be both for the silicosis class, the TB class, and the dependent. There will also be a special class of about 500,000, which will be for any beneficiaries which might be eligible, which will be eligible in case they've got serious diseases related to silicosis. The benefits in the settlement will increase from the third year in line with CPI. And I think I also have to mention that in 2017, the mining companies made provisions in their financial statements totaling about 5 billion. And it is important that we note that the 5 billion is an estimate and there will not be any cap to the benefits that will be paid by the trust. So essentially, if more claimants come to the fore, all claimants that are eligible will be eligible for payment.
Sorry, we have since been joined by other visitors from Uganda, and I'm going to request some of our staff members just to make space for them. So that they could get seats. I'm going to introduce them later when I get to be told. They are coming in with a particular South African called Mr. Mpanuzelwe Shosi. I'm so sorry, Khomoto, to be disturbing you so many times, but
thank you, Chair. While still on the 5 billion indicative settlement amount, I think it is also quite important that I alert the committee members that the 5 billion, although it is an estimate, will be made up of two buckets, which will be the benefits bucket and administrative cost bucket. So essentially, the benefits bucket is about 4.2 billion and 800 million is what is allocated towards the administrative costs, so that there is no disturbance in terms of the amount that goes to the claimants. So the administrative cost would really be to assist with medical benefit medical examinations and to assist in synergies, because the trust has been established in such a way that its operations will be closely linked with the existing statutory compensation. So to assist with those synergies, the administrative cost is part of the amount that has been allocated there too. the trust is set up in such a way that it will not be a lump sum scheme. It will be what we loosely term sort of a pay-as-you-go sort of scheme. So in the first 2 years, there will be about $1.4 billion that will be paid out by the mining companies to go towards benefits. And from the third year onwards, there will be calls for payment in terms of the claims history that would have been established in the first 2 years. The mining companies, I think it's also quite important to mention that they have put up financial guarantees in place so that no company is ever in a position where it does not fulfill its obligations for payment of benefits in terms of the settlement agreement. So those financial guarantees will be in place so that for whatever reason, if any one of the mining companies falls over, their obligations will still be able to be carried out. As I've mentioned, that the payments will be facilitated through the means of a trust. There will be 7 trustees that have been identified, 3 from the mining companies, 2 from the claimants' attorneys. There's 1 identified government trustee and 1 independent consensus trustee. And over and above the 7 trustees, there will be a trust advisory committee where input from all stakeholders will be given to the trust. So that will be made up of trade unions, community members, and any affected and interested party, you know, who will want to make input into the operations of the trust. And I think one important point to also mention, Chair, is the fact that although the settlement agreement has been approved by the court, there is still a condition precedent that has to be fulfilled. And that, well, two, one being the guarantees being in place, and the second one being the opt-out period. So essentially, the opt-out period gives any eligible claimant an opportunity to not be part of the settlement agreement if they so wish to pursue litigation on their own. In terms of the process that has been identified, there is a 30-day period of where the opt-out period began, where extensive media campaign and advertising and communication really in various media streams, newspapers, radios, has to be followed. As I mentioned, it will be for a period of 30 days, which began on the 26th of August and will be for a period of 30 days and 2 months after that. So essentially, it's like 90 days in all. And Chair, I think also as I mentioned yesterday, it's also in line with the principles of natural justice to say, you know, anyone who wants to not to be part of the settlement, be offered that opportunity to pursue litigation on their own. And yes, I think that is my story. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chairperson. It's a high-level summary, and we do apologize that we didn't have enough of documents, but we'll make that available to the Secretary to pass out to members. This was really part of a background, Chairperson, so we do apologize that we didn't come specifically to tell about the class action, but about the background to compensation. But this was a hot topic that the committee members needed to know about, so we do apologize to honorable members. I just want to conclude with 2 slides and then... So, Chair... History will repeat itself. So Sol Plaatje, in 1914, writes about the lives of mine workers in Kimberley. And remember, the act that we run was founded in 1912. 2 years later, here is Sol Plaatje writing about 200,000 subterranean heroes underground. So they had deep level mining at that stage, who by day and by night, for a mere pittance, lay down their lives to the familiar fall of rock, and who at deep levels, ranging from 1,000 to 3,000 feet in the bowels of the earth, sacrificed their lungs to the rock dust, which develops miners' typhus and pneumonia. Hopefully, Chairperson, 100 years from now, we won't have a similar saying about your committee and us having not worked together with stakeholders to deliver a better life for mine workers. Thank you. So this is the groups we've worked together with to turn around the system. It's not a single-handed process. But we have turned the corner, but of course we have to do much more work on prevention, like I mentioned, occupational exposure limits, etc. Thank you, Chair, for this first part of the presentation.
No, I doubt if we are going to the second part of the presentation. You have really made a very, very emotional presentation to some of the people in this room who are politicians from the background where we come from, because we are still wanting to correct. This is like part of correcting the past history of our forefathers. I take my hat off for yourself, Dr. Mchali, Dr. Rabada, for being out there, not in high heels, but in real techies, going to Msinga, going to Ofimvaba, going to Bizana, all over our country to trace and try and identify these people who otherwise would not have known that they are deserving at least this compensation to come their way. I do notice that Dr. Rabada is a familiar face to some of you South Africans, being a father of another star in our country. And behind you, Dr. Kisnasami, I thought I was seeing the MEC for education in Gauteng, but I don't know whether I'm mistaken. Colleagues, I want us to agree that we are not likely to take the annual performance plan today, because I do not know how many of our members, maybe right until 11:30, we might not have completed. This is just one presentation. I can't limit your engagement with it. Even before we come to what are we then expected to drive. So issues of questions, clarity seeking, your comments on this is extremely important. And again, we have joint committees here, both the Portfolio Committee for Health and the Portfolio Committee for Mineral Resources and Energy. So I don't know how you handle your meetings, my committee chair, but I usually ask that I give all members a number when they put their hands, and there may not be a second round, there may be, but if all members who want to involve themselves in this debate can then, in this discussion, can put up their hands, we note and give a colleague a number, and then, okay, keep your hand up, and you are going to help me, because some of the members are going, and then I'll start. Honorable Sokacha, you are number one. Honorable Munai, keep your hand up so you can. Munai, you are number two. Honorable Fan, that then you are number three. Honorable Wilson, four. Honorable Geller, number five. Honorable Jacobs, number six. Honorable Pumza, seven. Honorable Shlengwa, eight. Honorable Tembekwayo, nine. Honorable Chirwa, ten. Tumsala.
My
lamb. My lamb, you are number 11. And then the black rod is the only hand at the back. So we have 11 hands. I'm not the condos of well or more as a partner of all. 11 hands. Of course, Chairperson, you are number 12. Okay. Yeah, no, I'll come to my other clarity seeking questions. Let us do it in that order. I can't remember your number now. Just go on with the number that you have been allocated, starting with Honorable Sokacha.
How many minutes?
I'll pin
the
phone. Just behave. It's very difficult to restrain you on this discussion. But we need to be finished in this meeting by 11:30. So we have 45 minutes to wrap up with responses, of course, that are going to come in. If colleagues can do our best to have all our questions by 11 done, by 11 done, we could then get responses. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me welcome the presentation from Dr. Perry and Homotso. Thanks for allocating the number one. I'm from the city of First Kimberley. Everything, lights, everything, lessons come from the city of Kimberley. Chair, just three issues. Indeed, Chairperson, this is a very emotional presentation. Moreover, when Dr. Perry closes the presentation with a quotation from a very outstanding leader, also from Kimberley, so like, it's very emotional. The first question that I would like to ask Chair is, Dr. Berry said the claiming process is too long. And indeed, I fully agree, it's very long, because some of the member dies in the process without having benefited, and even their families not having benefited. And they are trying to make sure they shorten the process. I just want to check, Dr. Berry, where is the process now in terms of making sure we are shortening the process? The second question is around the one-stop service centers that you have mentioned that are in these different areas. Can you give us more? What is the establishment of the office? Is it effective? Are the office serving the particular area where it's located? And then the last question is from Khomotso. She indicated about the 5 billion, that is, it is divided into two, the settlement payments and also the administrative cost. And you said that the settlement is not a once-off payment. It's paid in tranches. I just want to check if a member dies in that process, is the family benefiting out of the payment cost and so on? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. One, of course, I think that the money is too small, but obviously there's been a court ruling, which, you know, there's a court judgment or court decision to that effect, because I know even DEBA themselves, they were saying we have billions lying for the workers unclaimed, other organizations, I mean, some to some degree even more than FSB will say that more than 15 billion, then the court come to a conclusion of 5 billion. And these all services that Dr. was trying to put about on the table, of intelligence-led, artificial intelligence, all these solutions, will they come from your organization, not from the workers' money? And the other key issues that I'm saying that the gold working groups, the kind of sicknesses does not only arises from the former gold mines, you know. It also arises from other mines, you know. Like, let me give you an example, uranium, rare earth minerals, which are most dangerous to that effect, radioactive and so on. So the key issue to me will be to say that, I mean, the other South Africa has been mined all over, Chairperson, by big mining corporations. Some they've closed, some they sold to each other and so on. I think they need to be brought on board and also be able to respond to this horrific or horror that has happened in the past. I'm not saying I should stuck in the previous horror, Doctor, but I'm saying that as part of trying to respond to, to the benefits of those that died, I'm surely that will be very helpful in the process. And I think the data will not limit to those countries that you have possibly been there, Zimbabwe, Botswana, that they are across within the SADC region. They are across, there are many, and I'm saying that, so it will be important that if you use South Africa print media here to advertise, and by the program that you need to advertise to go and come, it may not be enough. It's a process that I can do it, but we may need a rigorous media processes within and beyond the borders. And I'm saying that working closely with the embassies that are based here from those countries could pretty much help, because the voice of the state within those respective countries could help to mobilize those people. And the data that
that may be able to come through, it could be even better of legitimacy, because these people that have left their countries from those periods, government of those countries may have the data to back up your main data, which could be only possibly minimal of the process, I don't know, or more of the process, I don't know. So I think those are some of the areas that we need to be able to do to support the process. Let's bring other mining houses who have been mining not only gold mineral resources, but something that has impact, including coal as well. You know, these Val, whatever, the companies, and transport, you know, they must also be brought on board and be able to respond, because to reduce the 2-4 historical measures, I mean, including the diamonds, I mean, it's not only because dust in the mining sector, it arises. I mean, coal, all those things have a danger. I mean, I know if you speak Anglo-American so far as the gold chairperson alone, it will be problematic, because even here in Western Cape, 353 kilometers from here, in a place called Farnesdorp and so on, where they are trying to revive this mine, which have components of rare earth that can do electric vehicles and uranium, it is there, including Nakwanamakwa land in Northern Cape. So those are the areas. Let's bring other key players to come on board. Because these players that not only mine gold, so it can't be only gold working group.
Thank you, Chairman. I think you guys are doing, of what I can see, a tremendous job here. I think it's not easy to do this. And thank you for the information. It's an eye-opener on some factors. I just want to ask some clarity-seeking questions. The figures on slide 4, you don't have it all 2019 up to date. And then I hope your office is not looking like this anymore on slide 17. But yeah, I think we must take that up with public works and infrastructure, because all department buildings is in a terrible state. It's not only that one, but needs to be looked at. And then just for clarity, that court cases on slide 49, was it one big clash action, and is it all settled now, or are there still pending cases? And if there are still pending cases, how many? And if someone can just help me, because I never get the answer on this one, not even in education when I was in the Gauteng legislature. But asbestos in schools, where are we currently on that matter? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think some of my questions have been covered. I must admit I was actually more interested in going to the financials and the annual report, because I think this is where the predominant failure of not X failure, but our current challenges as far as the CCID are concerned are actually in the budgeting and the current situation and the challenges they face. So I would have liked to have dealt with that, but I think that would probably prolong the meeting by some hours, because I think there's a lot of questions in that. You talk about 236 controlled mines that you're working with at the moment. How many mines are there in total? In other words, what percentage is 236 of the controlled mines? In the big picture, how many mines are uncontrolled? And I mean, that's not even taking into account the Zamazamas. I think that must be terrifying. And while we can't control that, it obviously does have a serious impact on health, but so does a lot of the other foreign nationals and illegal activities in the country. Does asbestosis fall under the progressive mass fibrosis? I see that it's disconnected on your slides. You've got pneumonicosis, TB, tuberculosis, ciliosis, but the asbestos is on its own. There you go, the asbestos-related diseases. Obviously, it's a major issue, and we're coming across more and more people in our travels with asbestosis who we are referring to you, but the problems that we are finding. I visited a school not so long ago in Rustaval. The clinic is made out of asbestos. The school's buildings that they were using was made from asbestosis, and in fact one of the workers who had been at that school for 20 years recently died of asbestosis. So I think apart from the mine challenges, as far as asbestosis is concerned, our challenges are far bigger than the mines and mine-related incidents. The use of asbestosis not necessarily continues, but there's an awful lot of asbestosis exposure, not necessarily in the mines. That's just an example. But as I say, Chair, I would have been more interested in going into the financial. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation done by Dr. Berry. Correcting the mistake of the past, Chair, let me join you. It's really painful. My question, Chairperson, it's on the dust issue. As I said, I'm coming from the mining area, from Western area. There are mines there. For instance, there was a Kuktu, Kukwan, a Kloof before it became Stillwater, and also South Deep, and the Cartonville part of it. So my question, or I need a clarity, Chair, as people who are residing in that area, and also we are affected by this dust as community who are residing in that area, because at the end, some of our people get a communicable disease because we are there. Sometimes you'll see a smoke coming from the ground to the area. And the other issue, Chair, that I want to know is that according to the mines, they've got their social labor plan, they promise the community things, some are happening, some are not happening. But my fear, Chair, thank you very much for the presentation, but also you need to communicate with the municipality in terms of getting information, because some people, they don't go back to their homes after retirement. They just decide to stay in those areas. So maybe you can also get some of information if you can work together with the municipalities. And the issue of data, it worries sometimes because really I can understand before there was no technology, things were very difficult. But maybe if we can also trace, as we have already started to do the work, so that at least those people who must benefit, they benefit accordingly. The settlement, what about people who worked for the mine before 1965? The settlement is not covering them, and really it's a challenge. I don't know, but maybe we can come up with the mechanism, or I don't know, but I'll be corrected if, because I know the mine started in 1818. So really, those families of those people, they must also benefit. Chair, the other issue, the last question that I have during the presentation, slide 7, Dr. Bev said that 400,000 is excluding the ex-mine workers, they are not covered. If I can get clarity on that one, why they are not covered, so that at least I know actually. But really, it's very painful, Chair. And I think from now, because we have discovered the disease of lungs, moving forward, when you recruit people, I don't know, Chair, but we need to do something,
because really the economy of this country is in mining, and our people were not paid accordingly. They are poor. I must tell you, they are poor. I've seen some of them after retrenchment, after pension. It's just a disaster. It's a burden to the government. It's a burden to the municipality. But they've worked many years, but they are still poor. So I want to welcome your presentation. It has really opened our eyes. Moving forward, we'll need more information so that at least we capacitate ourselves and also share the information even with other people. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me congratulate Dr. Kisami and his team. I can remember from when I was a medical student in the early 1980s. This is when this thing really came out. And it's taken us that long from the early 1980s that when there was much research and much debate, and we were even taught on the effects of the dust on the health of the people who were working in the mines. And it's taken us up to 2003, as you had shown, for that first claim, where the asbestos claim, obviously, which now was also different from the one that happens with Mr. Mankai, up to where we are now with a 5 billion rand settlement. So it's a major improvement over a number of 20 years compared to the 100 years and the 150 years that went before. And surely somebody had championed this to bring us to this point. And I want to just thank you, because the health of our people obviously are very important to us. So in terms of the history, where we know our people have been used in the mines from the beginning of the diamond mines, etc., and so it has escalated over the times, and we can go and look at the holes and the dust in Johannesburg and the sand mines, etc. And I'm sure that even those sand mines must be having an influence on the health of the people there. Those heaps which are all over Johannesburg. What are the gains? I see a lot of gains, and that is what I was speaking to, the gains over the last 20 years, and we hope that you'll be able to escalate this multifold. I also realize that there are challenges, and the challenges, I guess, is still getting all the mining companies on board on this process. And I would guess in the various mining sectors, and it might be different challenges with the different mining sectors. And then I also note there's one particular act that we need to look at, and I just want to remind our members here, that's the amendment to the Occupational Diseases in Mines and Works Act of 1973, so that we note it and we make certain that we take that forward in the 5 years that we are here, and hopefully right in the beginning. I want to ask a question to you, and it's based on something that a YouTube video that I watched about a mine worker in a Russian diamond mine and the processes which they follow there. When the miners arrive in the morning, before they enter the mine, they get a full medical screening. Those who do your automated machines, your x-rays, etc. That's in the morning before they enter. And also to make certain that they don't have alcohol with them or had taken alcohol, so they also small blood tests. And then when they leave in the evening, they get the same chest x-ray, for example, done again. That same medical screening is done. So they're done twice a day in the in Russia. And then on top of that, they get 76 days a year off, because it's recognized that the dust exposure in the mining industry is a danger to the health of the person. So we are here now in 2019. We have the settlement. Now my question is, what is in place going forward as from May 2019? What are those processes that we're going to look at so that we can prevent these things from happening in the future? Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. And let me also join the colleagues in congratulating the colleagues for this work that has been done to correct the past mistakes. Of course, our people have been abused. 1.6 million workers, black workers, who were supposed to have been taken care of from 1973. We are only beginning to see the mining companies agreeing to help our people. And that is why I'm saying we need to congratulate you. It is still very little, but I think if we can get all the mining companies. And my next question would be, how many mining companies have not yet come on board? Because we talked of 6 mining companies. I agree with my colleague. It should be paramount and it should be something that we take as a priority to amend this act. And I think as these 3 departments, we should not also perpetuate the plight of our people of saying, I have a lung disease, I must go to health. I've got an arm that has been cut off, I must go to labor. No, we should work together so that there should be some working together, something that will make, if I have an arm that was chopped off and I've got a lung disease, I must go to one spot, one point, and get my compensation. That we should work as fast as we can. One other question I want to ask from the... Do we have any people who want to opt out of the settlement? Well, it's small, the cash settlement is 5 billion. But if they were never compensated, I know the pain that the miners go through, particularly if they're from Eastern Cape, would understand how painful it has been for them to be coming to Johannesburg. Even if you have lost your husband, you'll have to go and get papers and come to the mines to come and claim, and you come back, you don't have... Our people are illiterate. They come back, they don't have a clue of what they're supposed to do. I want to plead with the colleagues that we should speed up whatever processes that we have that can alleviate the pain of the mine workers. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm also welcome the presentation. And first of all, I must be agree with my colleague here with all the pain she was alluded. I'm from KZN, KwaZulu-Natal. Some of our brothers and fathers, I just go to this mine. Now I feel that pain. We have also a cold mine, not Okoko, where there are illiteracy. Some of them, they don't know where to go to. And I agree with my colleague there that other statistics we should conduct with the municipality, because the municipalities, they know better. My question is that, what does the family supposed to do if their beloved one deceased? Do they bring their IDs or death certificate or whatever? And we started from which year? And what happened to those who are still alive but sick? Because some of them are going to the hospital, they are lying there, they are just helpless. What is going to do with them? Because we have a gold mine in our called Zaire, it's a lonely area, dust was all over, and those people are dying with lung disease. And some of them are working in Johannesburg. All those people, I am from school, some of learners have no fathers, no brothers because of the mines. And I don't think they have get something to compensate them. I thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first, it's a comment based on this document that deals with occupational lung disease. The settlement of silicosis and the TB class. According to me, this is the very, very most important document that governs how the monies will be paid out as according to the court of law. And what we expected as the members of this committee was not just to be told word of mouth about this very important information in here. What we expected was a summary on a PowerPoint that informs us of the whole process from the beginning until the end, so that we don't have to be confused, because for us this is the gist of the information for today. So next time, don't just speak mouth to mouth about the most important thing. Preparations plays an important role, please. So it's unacceptable to have a distorted type of presentation that includes the most important aspects about the settlement, including the sufferers of the silicosis. On the basis of compensation, for some workers, the amount allocated for compensation is insufficient to satisfy the levels of injustice that mining families have suffered historically. That I'm referring to the past 100 years, for an example. So my question is, there is an agreement that has been reached so far that provides for the establishment, as it is included here, of Siamiso Trust that will manage the program or the issuing of money between 70,000 and 500,000, depending on those four categories per claimant. My question is, why is there a limit of 70,000 to 500,000? Was it not necessary that we don't close the brackets to 500,000, rather increase it to 1,000,000? What is 500,000 for a person who worked for more than 35 years in a mine? What is the value of 500,000 in South African rents? What would the poor miners do with it? My question is, yes, an agreement has been reached, but is there nothing that can be done that some miners would qualify for more than 500,000? That's my question. Question number two, how are we guaranteed for the proper management of the distribution of the money, having this thing in South Africa to say you give people some billions to manage or to distribute, but half of those billions will never do the functions as they are supposed to. It will never reach the hands of those poor miners who need them, but it will go into the pockets of those who are managing the funds. How guaranteed are we that exactly the same thing will happen? The third question is, within the boundaries of each and every mine, we find not only families of miners staying there, we find black people staying as a community. Though they don't have families or people who are working in the mines, they are also affected by this ailment, the silicosis and the TB. How do you accommodate them into your program? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have a few questions here, and I think it must be put on record that mining does much more harm than just tuberculosis and silicosis. At the center of mining, the after effects of mining is essentially dysfunctional black family units, where fathers and brothers are taken out of their family units and sent to the mines to go and die. And it's absolutely tragic that our means of acknowledging their deaths and their loss and their sicknesses is what we have here. I don't think anything can justify the level at which we have gone to, in fact, compensate is, I think it's a wrong word, but to acknowledge what mining has done to people's lives. So I'll just get to the questions. I want to know what the precise challenges are in setting up one-stop services. You mentioned that there were challenges in Tata, but didn't really say what those challenges were. So if you can just explain for us what challenges of setting up one-stop services are in detail as well. And if there is a system that regulates the payment processes of claimants and how this process is regulated, I think, and you alluded to the fear of the soil, just leave that question because it's covered. And also the means of sharing knowledge with the family of mine workers in regards to the system, and how does it take place? Do you guys give them pamphlets? Do you go to their families to talk to them? Or must they just guess that when the uncle is sick and can't go to work, they must come to you guys and claim? Like, what is the process of disseminating information in regards to dealing with this situation of the families? And also, is there a prevention mechanism, or are you just going to have to live with the fact that people are going to die when they're going to mining? Have there been means of looking at prevention methods? Because I know with SO2, which I'm going to come to afterwards, I forgot the name, of something they put over the coals to lower the emission of SO2. No, it's done in other countries. I know we are not doing that, but is there a prevention method or a system or research done at least on how to alleviate or to decrease, or are we just going to live with the fact that people are going to die to tuberculosis when they get into mining and silicosis? And lastly, it's not just tuberculosis and silicosis. There's been a research that has been done on SO2 pollutant emissions, and clearly Mpumalanga is the second highest in the world, that shows that there's other ailments like diabetes and strokes, and pregnant women also suffer. So what then becomes the go-to for other people who are affected by this situation beyond just the miners? The people living in the area as well, are they also at liberty to claim? I want clarity on that, and if there are means to address these things, because it's not as simple and as easy as it's presented. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll be very brief. My first question goes to, if I have a look at slide 26, the second highest percentage of ex-mine workers is in the Northwest, and yet there is no one-stop service center in the Northwest that is servicing those people. So can you explain that for me? My second question goes to the slide about, I think it was slide 17, the pictures of your offices and the situation that you found there. In 1994, 95, and 96, I worked in the Medical Bureau of Occupational Diseases as an intern. And part of my job was capturing those files onto a database system. So my question is this: what happened to that database system? Thank you, Chair.
Okay. No, thank you. Thank you very much. Before I go to my questions, which is going to start with slide number 3, let me just indicate that we have since been joined by members of parliament from Uganda. I do not have their names, but it's just to mention that they are here as a study tour visiting our country, and they seem to have requested to come and join and see deliberations of the Portfolio Committee for Health. They come from two portfolio committees in Parliament of Uganda. There's a committee specifically, Committee on HIV and AIDS, and there's another Committee of Health. So we welcome you and thank you for coming into participation. You missed out the presentation. We are now on issues of questions. This slide, I think, is the one slide which I'm sure Honorable Luzipo is going to summarize as a slide that we are going to maybe take up, because it talks to policy issues, which may need some discussion with other, as you rightly put it, with others. So I think if we do not exhaust this slide, it's fine. It is going to be a homework for how Honorable Luzipo leads us with other tools. Committees to really assist in that. I mean, colleagues have spoken about this and that. The arm and leg comes elsewhere. Heart and lung is in health. Slide number 6. My question is just based on slide number 6. Is exactly what I was just saying, that you are saying lung and heart is in that one department, in one act, and the other rest of the body. So it's refining that, Honorable Luzipo, that I think needs to be said. Slide number 9. You know, this is something extremely painful in the country. Difficulties in estimating numbers of workers and former workers. You know, we don't talk too much about this thing, but it's true. And I want your comment, Dr. Kisner Sam, on this matter, because even here, long time ago, in this country, if you asked how many children are born in Kukuletu and do not celebrate their first birthday, the government would have told you, we don't know those numbers because we don't count those people. That's a painful reality, because that thing did not happen by mistake. It was all over this country where a certain sector of our population was not being counted. Mm-hmm. So it really pains. It makes one feel very agitated for now to say, why are you not really dealing with the mortality of children in Kukuletu when they don't have a base where we came from, because the base was never there. You just zoomed in the new democracy and started solving issues there. But issues were left like that from time immemorial. So I just thought this slide not only talks about mine workers, it talks about how generally the black population was being taken care of. Can you go to slide number 15? When looking into this slide, you are saying that South Africa is number eight in terms of gold mining countries. I just wanted to know in that slide those countries, how they probably have been managing. I know you quoted only Australia, they're 18. I would imagine that those countries probably have got systems in place, or they had, if you do, could share that. We are just number 8. There are countries that are mining top. There is the first country, I can quite see, China, followed by Australia, Russia. So how are their systems in terms of looking after their citizens? If you did, how long did it start? Slide number 29, last part one. I really want to understand this part. South Africa is not appearing there. You are saying our speed limit, that limit is 0.1. Please explain that to me as to who decided on 0.1 when other countries are deciding on 0.0 something, and explain. I really, really want to understand that painful part as to how on earth can you say our speed limit is 200? I mean, because 0.1, you would reach 0.1 faster. There's a big number to go to. So explain that as to in relation to countries like Colombia, as to how are we really doing this. Slide number 30. I really think this is extremely important to have, because really, honestly speaking, the mining in SADC has been largely in South Africa. So maybe you can say other countries too. But we in health have been saying, if this snake of silicosis TB is all over SADC, its head is in South Africa. It's the mines in South Africa that have actually contributed to so much silicosis and TB in Lesotho, in Mozambique, Botswana, any other country. Of course, Botswana maybe might have contributed. So that is something that really we are not very proud of in terms of the gains that have been made through mining and the repercussions that have been there amongst our people. That is something that, if it is being corrected, yes, I know some members are saying, are you really correcting in really very progressive way? That one step that you are making is commendable, but I would wish that it could be improved. So I would have asked what Honorable Geller asked, systems in place now. If I get there, you recruit me to be in the mine, am I still going to be exposed to this? Are you having systems in place to detect how often do my chest x-ray check my silicosis, whatever you check there? And when I exit, do I get to be followed quickly and be taken care of so that you don't have another backlog? How are your systems? Our chairperson will close after this meeting, after you have answered. He will close because I'm already tasking him to lead us in other processes. So maybe you could answer now, but you don't have all the time, Dr. Kisner, so I'm in the world. It's 11 o'clock now. If we are finished by quarter past, 20 past, we'll be happy.
Chairpersons and honorable members, thanks for the insight and input. I'm going to, there are some members that will speak to some of the issues, but maybe deal with, it's been a difficult process. This is an underserved area. There's only 40 medical doctors in the country with specialist qualifications. If you take the field itself in terms of practitioners, who have to look after the health of the 18 million, 17 million workers in South Africa. There's only 40 of us with specialist qualifications. You know, like OBGYN, pediatrics, etc. So the health of workers is not really a priority, and it's something that needs to be surfaced. And I think that's where, Chair, you're saying that you all will take forward this policy framework, because that basically is within the hands of the political process, the policy and governance framework for occupational health, the health of workers in South Africa. And in our case, because of migrant labor, the health of workers in Southern Africa. And it might be later on that I'm glad that there are parliamentarians visiting from other parts of the world. But it's a way wider issue of the health of workers on the African continent. As we open up the free trade areas, etc., we also have to work out movement of goods and services. How do we sort out the workers that are involved in producing those goods and services? So it's a policy framework, and I'm glad you've highlighted that. And it's something that we rely on. You're taking that forward together with your counterpart in the Portfolio Committee on Employment and Labour. So that's the policy issues. On I'm going to leave the colleagues from the Gold Working Group to deal with many of the questions on the settlement, because they've got answers to those things, and we can come back to that. But dealing with some of the issues on maybe the first part is our fund and the settlement fund. That even if somebody is deceased, the mine worker is deceased, the dependents will get access to the benefits. So that's covered. And this goes back to 1965. We'll talk about the question before 1965. But it doesn't mean, the only problem is that hopefully there's some documentation. Now the problem is somebody didn't come into the system. That's going to be the problem. Now if they died in a hospital, if they were not part of our database, as I showed, then we might have some problems, but that's something that we'll have to tackle. And then we also have to provide for the living mine workers who are eligible for the claims. We have to provide these services. Hence, I gave you examples of the fixed facility, one-stop service centers, and mobile facilities that will help. And TERBA,
as I said to you, is turned the corner. Where previously we had difficulties with TEBA. TEBA is the administrative arm with 60 offices in Southern Africa. They are the administrative arm that are physically in sites where mine workers, ex-mine workers, know TEBA, and they actually will recruit. There might be some dynamics around Mpumalanga, where it's recruited locally. And for the members, in terms of the process, we highlighted gold mining and silicosis and TB, but I gave you the rest of the stuff, coal workers. It's a wide issue. I couldn't cover everything in this presentation in terms of coal workers, pneumoconiosis, what's called black lung. So that was what was happening in Australia in terms of that process. But our legislation in Department of Health makes provision for 6 dust-related diseases. So it's a gap in the legislation. We can't cover everything else. But if somebody got asbestos, as Honorable Wilson talked about, from the school, you know, the roof, I'm just using that example, that's under the Department of Employment and Labor. So that person, if it's known and could be proven as a direct result of the work occupation of the person, or the plumber working on pipes that has asbestos in it, so we know that, or brake lining, old brake lining, that's a Department of Employment and Labor issue, and hence we need to have a discussion about how do we take this. The problem is that the plumber would have died 20 years later from asbestos, and QIDA is an incident injury related system. So there are some of the discussions we need to have when we meet our counterparts there. So it's not covered under our legislation, similar to the problem that we're having on environmental exposure. So one of the big problems we're having is the asbestos mines closed down in the 1960s. In fact, 1970, I think, was the last asbestos mine. The problem, there were no records kept. Hence, I'm glad Chairperson honed in on the database issue. Because if you don't know the number of children born in Guguletu, you can't work out the infant mortality rate in Guguletu or the under 5 mortality rate. Likewise, you can't work out the mortality rate in workers if you don't have a database. Hence, we are appealing for that database to be set up. We've not set it up for mine workers, but we'll actually pull that together. So the key area is that this is the issue that we need to work with. Environmental exposure where communities. Now, silica dust, I'm giving you the factual science, but maybe there are colleagues here who are much more eminent scientists. I have a medical background, occupational medicine and public health. So I can only give you the science that we have at the moment. Asbestos you can get from the environment, asbestos-related diseases, you know, the mine tailings, etc. Silica dust is a nuisance dust, so it will create you some problems, but it's not going to give you. So this was underground mine workers, that's rock drillers, winch operators, that were directly exposed in a closed environment. And that's linked to what Chairperson talked about, the occupational exposure limit. So Chair, I'm just going about in a much more answering, rather than going individual questions, we might miss some of them, but to tell you that. So the big issues are, there are other departments that deal, local government and environmental, I might miss some of the new terms for environmental affairs. So unfortunately, some of these things, there's a policy gap in community exposures to sulfur dioxide, SO2, which the Honorable Member referred to, sulfur dioxide, and I think the Mail and Guardian reported recently on the pollution soup in Creel in terms of the process. Now there's work that the Minerals Council is doing under Mr. Nick Lesufi. You might want to comment on that, about what they're trying to do with clean technology on coal, and how do we go on that in terms of the process, in terms of the energy needs of the country. But it's a policy gap in a sense that Human Rights Commission had a hearing in 2016 on peri-mining and mining community effects in terms of the mining. So Chairperson, you should get a copy of that report as a Chapter 9 institution. And they've laid out various directives as a Chapter 9 institution for departments to follow up. One of the directives is about doing respiratory health assessments and mental health assessments in mining and peri-mining communities. They've asked our department, health, and minerals and resources and energy to commission the studies. Those are very expensive studies. They are what are called epidemiological studies. So we have to follow up to find out how these communities are affected. Now the key area is that what next? And we don't have answers on that. On the issue of asbestos, etc., that's housing, human settlements, education. Again, definitely in health, we can't do everything. We can assess and say there's a problem, but we can't intervene on, you know, sorting out new roofs or sorting out new housing, etc. That's a different policy framework and different mandates and different voters and budgets and all of those things. So we just appreciate that the committees do raise these issues and how we take it forward. So let me quickly then move forward in terms of the process. The 400,000, no, that slide I showed was the
the current frameworks. But our fund covers ex-mine workers and current mine workers. Likewise, the other QIDA fund, Department of Employment and Labor, will cover also ex-workers and current workers. The problem is they don't have a system to track in the Department of Employment and Labor when you exit the workforce. That's the example I gave about farm workers who spray pesticides or diesel mechanics who work with diesel fumes, particulate emissions. Sorry if I'm using very technical terms. The fumes from the diesel will ultimately give them lung cancer, but you have to have a system to follow up. Our law in the Department of Health allows us the follow-up process. Yes, it's flawed in terms of resources, but we don't have such a thing in the Department of Labor. So those are things that you'd have to work through Chairperson on the policy gap. So the claimant process, yes. I gave you this very fancy slide that we're working on. This is the electronic system that's going to help. It's a very busy slide, and Chairperson, I'm sure you're going to call us again. I'm not too sure if Mineral Resources and Energy will call us, but we're quite willing to discuss this. This is in, we'll go live in field testing in a matter of a month in terms of the entry point. So this is helping to shorten the process of documents, ID documents, registration documents, linking up with Home Affairs, linking up, and we are talking to neighboring country governments about how we link up with them. So we take the point, we have met the Ministries of Health, Home Affairs equivalent in Lesotho, Swaziland. We spent a lot of time with neighboring country governments in terms of this and inputs on that. So this is the slide that will shorten it. We are using artificial intelligence to help us with the x-rays, and we are hoping to have a, you'll see in the APP, month one, registration, month two, assessment, registration and medical assessment for eligible claimants, month two, certification, run by the two esteemed doctors on my side with a panel of doctors, and month three, payment if you've got a compensable illness. But I gave you the complex bureaucracy. This, as I said, this act was never written for this 1.6 million ex-mine workers or eligible people that have come into the system. But we are hoping to take this forward in terms of that process and shorten the system. Let's stick to then the concept, Chairperson, that you'd asked about the OELs and prevention, which came through from quite a few of the honorable members. Prevention is the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy. I can come into the back door about we get a levy on the fund from the mining companies that pays per risk shift. I'm using the TB incidence data and the dust level data in terms of managing the levy. But we are not there to enforce prevention. I don't have an inspector to go to XYZ mine and say, what are your dust levels and what are you doing about it? That is unfortunately in a different department, and there'll be mandate creep if Kisnasamy extended himself to that, and I could get a court action against me as to why are you enforcing something that is not in your mandate. The mandate for prevention is the Mine Health and Safety Act, and that does not sit in the Department of Health. And secondly, we don't have the resources to police that. On the issue of controlled mines and non-controlled mines, it's a vexing issue. Remember the point I made right at the beginning. Health should not be running this fund. This is part of the Department of Employment and Labor. So it's by chance we landed up in it. We tried to do the best we can. That's why we're asking you for the amendments, thanks to one of the honorable members, Dr. Jacobs, about the fact that we're going to try and bring it to you as soon as possible in terms of this process for those amendments in terms of the movement to the Department of Employment and Labor. Now, the OEL, Chairperson, you raised a very important issue. As I told you, it's the example of the speed limit. So occupational exposure limits are what the international community sets up. It comes from a field called occupational hygiene, the science of prevention and protection mechanisms. So there are special technical people called occupational hygienists who go and measure these levels. So I'm giving you the data. South Africa is 0.1 milligram per cubic meter in terms of the guideline under the Mine Health and Safety Act. And I'm giving you these figures in terms of this, because this, if you take Anglo-American or Harmony, if it works in British Columbia, it will have to satisfy that 0.025 limit as set by the British Columbia province in Canada. It will have to satisfy that, because that inspector will enforce that figure. So unfortunately, again, this doesn't sit in my framework. It sits in Department of Mineral Resources and Energy. So they've got to make the modification. There are milestones that were agreed on in 2003, 2008, and the milestone says there will be a guideline to enforce the 0.05 in 2024. Likewise, no new workers exposed to silica, etc. So those are milestones in the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy, and agreed to by the trade unions and at summits that the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy has convened between the mining companies and trade unions in the mining sector, where they are the same. I just, as my, given my previous life as a scientist, raised the issue around the fact that we have commissioned science in 2003 by Gavin Churchard, and I can make the paper available to your committee, which says that 0.05 was not even protective for workers in South Africa. Like this, we'll have a tool for particulate emissions, for uranium exposure, radioactivity. So I'm just giving you one example for silica dust exposure, but there's an entire table of we have urban driving, 60 kilometers, etc. So I hope that helps you. It comes from a science of the dust level, and we have a technical tool that you have a dust monitor, you wait and you go underground, and it takes things, and we take the samples and we put it into a lab and we measure it, etc. On your study visits, and I know that the committees have study visits, we'd be quite willing, the counterpart institute is the National Institute for Occupational Health, which I used to run previously, and we'd be able to take you to that and show the members how these things are done and measured and all of those things. It's an institute run by the National Health Laboratory Service. The one-stop service centers. We started this as, because previously mine workers, as the Honourable Member talked from the Eastern Cape about people coming to Johannesburg, we felt it was very tough for a widower, a 70-year-old mine worker to come to Johannesburg to get assessed for their medical assessment, etc. Because we need to do chest x-rays, lung function tests. Many of our public sector facilities don't have lung function test machines. It's called spirometry. So we set these units up to be like a gateway clinic, similar to... Because if you have to go to a typical hospital chairperson and say, I'm a mine worker and I need an assessment done, our average medical students, nursing class students, etc., are not taught about occupational health, the health of workers. So you go to a hospital, a public hospital, and you say, I need an assessment done, and you're walking in. You're not an acute patient. Okay, they might listen to you. Later on, you sit in the queue while there's trauma, pregnant woman delivering, etc., and you wait in the queue. Later on, you finally then get an assessment done. Then you say, my documents might be sent to Johannesburg. No public hospital is going to send your documents to Johannesburg. So there's a range of issues that, firstly, we don't know about occupational health at a public hospital. Secondly, we might not have an instrument called a lung function machine. We have things called peak flow meters, but we may not have this at a district hospital. It might be at a specialist hospital. So these are some of the things we started exploring as pilot projects. So the difficulties and challenges we had was that how do we work with the provincial hospitals, and it might be something that we are considering, Chair, as pilots under the National Health Insurance Fund for campus health and workers' health that begins to start looking at a new model for delivering of services to healthy populations or populations who might have subclinical. That means it's not manifested. The person has not got shortness of breath, but walks in. Because normally hospitals deal with sick patients. Now you're walking in and saying, I need a preventive health program. And linked to that is the mining industry has been probably in the lead about these preventive programs. I mean, if you're an active mine worker, yes, you go through all of this stuff in terms of the YouTube. And that's linked to, partly it's not linked to a employment screening, but it's linked to diamond stealing. So, and I'm sure De Beers or the diamond companies have the same problem, that every day you go through a low-dox x-ray machine to see that you're not carrying anything in, and when you come out, you're not carrying diamonds out with you. I don't want to tell you about carrier pigeons in Alexander Bay, but you could talk to the Honourable Member from the Northern Cape about carrier pigeons and Alex Cox.
We have 3 minutes to wrap up everything.
Okay, I'm going to move to then the colleague from the mining, from the settlement, maybe to deal with the settlement stuff. And Chairperson, I'm sure you're going to call us back, not for the APP, but we could have a special session. Just to say about the issues of international, we are looking at study visits, and we'd welcome, we can't take all members, but we'd welcome members coming. I'm not sure how budgets are arranged. But that's why we want to have study visits to mining countries like Brazil. Brazil, for example, has a 15-year span of workers in the mining sector, and thereafter you are retired from the mining sector. And it's very interesting in the science work we did now, that at 15 years is the cutoff for people getting silicosis. So Australia, Canada, and Brazil, and the International Labour Organization, we wanted to look at some of these visits, or international study visits, but we'll talk to you, Chairperson, outside of the meeting in terms of the study visits. So that give you an idea of what did Australia do that's different from South Africa and inputs. Can I just hand over to Komotso or Abri van Vieren on some of the things? I'm sorry we couldn't answer all the questions, but I'm sure we'll be back to deal with some of these issues.
Motto, transparent.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Dr. Kisnesami. I think Dr. Kisnesami touched on the issue of dependence, so I'm not going to go into it. With regards to the first two questions relating to the benefits and the administrative costs bucket, the whole trust and settlement has been drafted such that there will be synergies between the operations of the trust and the current statutory compensation system. So we are not looking to reinvent what is already working, essentially. So, but also to clarify that there will not be any dipping into the benefits. So what has been set aside for payment of benefits will just cater for benefits and not administrative costs. With regards to the class action. The class action has been, the legal process has been finalized and completed as regards to the six gold mining companies that I mentioned. So that process has been completed and finalized. But there was also another question wanting to know how many gold mining companies are not part of the settlement. I'm not sure of the exact number, but I know there's the big six gold mining companies that were part of the settlement agreement, and I think Barbara will speak a bit on that. And the gold mining companies that were not part of the settlement, the claimant attorneys have given us an undertaking that they will continue with the legal process against those mining companies, the gold mining companies that are not part of the settlement. I don't know, Barbara, do you want to expand on that?
Yeah, thanks, honourable members, Chair. I think what we are sharing collaboratively is the product of, in terms of the settlement, negotiations that took six companies with six claimants attorney firms about 4 years to get. So with any negotiations, there's give and take, and there is a process that you go through. So is it perfect? It's not perfect, but it's the best that we could come up over this period of time. So just by way of introduction, there's no amount of money that can pay anybody for the harm suffered through silicosis. So this is the big historic thing here, is the fact that we're actually trying, through collaboration between companies and with the Department of Health, and I must be quite honest and share with all the members, because we've been to the Department of the Department of Minerals and Energy has been very supportive, and the Mine Health and Safety Council, etc. So it's not a perfect solution for all the problems in South Africa. So it only covers employees and ex-employees from 1965 until the effective date. With regard to communications, there's been thousands of advertisements, not only in South Africa, on radio and in media, that's been publicized and aired at the moment in terms of the settlement and where to go to. And that's where the partnership with TEBA comes in. There's about 60 offices of TEBA, and that's the place where we say to people at the moment, if you think you've got a claim, go there, register the claim, don't pay anybody any money to process this claim, because that's why the benefit amount that Komotso has been talking about is set. It's so nobody can take a percentage of that set amount as a reward or facilitating the claim. The service is free to people that qualify at the end of the day. I think the other thing is the fact that, just to come back to the six companies, it doesn't cover the whole industry, but the significant decision that has been taken is the fact that the Minerals Council, which represents most of the mining industry, is also present, and we are in the process of including the Minerals Council that started to work with the compensation department actually in 2003 under the then Chamber of Mines. But we are in the process of extending the support, first of all, to the Commissioner's Department to try and improve services and all these systems on all the mining companies. So, but again, the Minerals Council, Mr. Lesufi can maybe just tell us how many members, but I think there's like 95 members of the Minerals Council. So it's a process of making the best of what we have that's never been done before in our country, and that's the light that we see it as a huge success story of turning the tide. Thanks.
Mr. Lesufi, just 1 minute.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, I think I just want to confirm that I think we're committed to supporting the Compensation Commissioner in terms of improving business efficiencies and processes at the MBUCCOD. And to that effect, I think we have committed the resources for the next 3 years, you know, that would, you know, support some of the systems that they've put up here that, you know, comes from the resources that the Minerals Council has provided to the Compensation Commissioner. Thanks, sir.
I'll now hand over. I'm sorry, colleagues, honourable members, there were some requests to take another round. I'm sorry, it's not possible because of time constraints already in advance. Let me hand over now to my co-chairperson, Honourable Luzipho, to give us a way forward. I've sat with him in many meetings. He's very good in listening and giving a way forward. But maybe some of these things, invite to international tours, falls really much more within yourself. Maybe in closing for us and thanking all the members, I leave it to you, Honourable Chair.
No, thanks, Chair. I was told I'm a deputy chair, so don't. No, look, thanks, Chair. First, let me, you see, when you come to a meeting, you end up super tumtuan. I'm now given a package of what has to be done. I think the most important thing is that let's appreciate the initiative that has been taken, and also the fact that the team from the Department of Health is not getting impatient. The biggest problem sometimes is that when you continue to do one and the same thing, you feel like you're wasting. I know, I can see how passionate Dr. Sami about this, and I think he's been doing it for the past almost 10 years. I was fortunate to be orientated in the same thing in the 5th Parliament, and is still doing it again in the 6th Parliament. So that element of patience, I think, is the first thing that we should appreciate in the presentation. Because most of us, you feel that it's like teaching people who can't learn. So it's going to require patience. I think that is the first thing. The second thing, I think, if we were to look at these issues, we might have to break them into the three categories of what is it. One is to look on the issue of the compensation for the historical effects, the legacy issues, which is what the establishment is all about. The second one is a future approach dealing with one compensation system. But whilst you still have got these three, in fact, part of this exercise was informed by the burden that was given to the health system. We need, as one of the areas of focus is this thing. The third element is the most complex one, which is a painful one. I would say is the impossible, is the outcome of the gold working group settlement. Probably if I were to start with that one, the first problem is that you've got a what you would call a declaration of the court, that they've made a settlement in court. So it's a legal binding from all parties. Whether you've got a grievance, it was a voluntary process in the first instance, and with a limited number of gold companies. On the other side, a private legal action by a company of attorneys, as well as the Legal Resource Center. So that settlement is there. And I think the concerns of members, it's not far-fetched. The experience on the trust is that in most cases, monies disappear. Unfortunately, the law, again, when it comes to trust accounts, sometimes is the one that costs us. You don't volunteer to be part of a trust. It is those who are part of the process who determine who will be the trustees. And I think we've got many cases. Those who are from the Northwest will know what happened in the trust account, or what you call it, the D account. They will know what had happened. So that is the first tricky part. But also I think it's important to say it is not only that legal firm. There is another process that was happening parallel, which I think it was instituted by another firm, which is Barnabas Tool. So it's not that this settlement nullifies that other one. You wouldn't know. You may have that settlement, but you may still have other processes continuing, even beyond those who might have opted out of the process. And I think that is one part that will. But one issue that I think also is important, that when this process moves, I think we must accept one thing. It cannot be done in a three-hour period. I must be honest. One, if you do it on the other side, it requires that, not just a study tour, it requires you have some sort of an oversight. For an example, I hear members, they talk about the Northwest. There is still a dispute about even the number. Some of us are contesting the numbers of the Northwest. If you look, the Eastern Cape is written as 31. But the majority of people, and there are no mines in the Eastern Cape, when you talk about 31, it is the people affected. Now, if you deal with that thing, some of the people might have been from the Eastern Cape, but never moved back to the Eastern Cape, would have been in the Northwest. So those complex issues have to deal with. But the Eastern Cape on its own becomes more complex because, and which I raised last time, if you've got the Nelson Mandela Academic in Umtata, the majority of your people are not in Umtata. They will be in your Pondolet area, Bizana and other areas in Lusikisi. That becomes another issue then between that area and Umtata as a distance. So these are the things that we'll have down as we deal with them. It becomes more. I would have thought down the line also, Doug, you'll have to explain, because one issue is on the tracing. One of the things I've said, that we might have complicated the tracing exercise. You see, there's a basic thing. If you go to the rural areas, you've got your traditional leaders, some of them are named Una, others it's a different, it's easy for them to do it. You've got your local councillors that are supposed to can assist in terms of data collection. So even that issue of data collection, in as much as you would want to make it sophisticated, it can be made a little bit easy. I don't know how far the chief whip of the ANC now was the one who was your contact in the Eastern Cape when he was the MEC of Arts, Culture and Sports. I wouldn't know how that process now has gone when he has moved to the National Assembly. So it might be important also to say, what then, at what stage are we in specifically with regard to the Eastern Cape? So my take, Chairman, I'm happy that you said you finally found DEPA. Because there was one, when we get time, TEPA will have to clarify, because one of the things we told was that in TEPA, specifically in Umtata, they used to charge 50 rand for, what is it?
Record of service.
Yes, the record of service. Now, that was a very strange exercise that we're getting. So I'm saying, Chair, I understand why they would have given much more of a high-level presentation, but it will require that you go deeper on the practicalities. How do you do those things practically? I would appreciate that when we deal with this issue, we don't leave the Department of Labor. We shouldn't leave the Department of Labor. The biggest injustice that had happened is that the law doesn't apply retrospectively. The problem now is that some of the things that are happening are as a result of the non-application of a proper law. You only have true post-democratic dispensation where there is an undertaking to correct. But even if you correct, you can't make a law today and then say it will apply from 1965. It's a way that you have to manage that process going forward. So I think the Department of Labor, and it's called Employment, must also be the one that is brought into effect. Lastly, I think as we undertake that journey, and as presentations were being made, I can see you pass the ball to Mineral Resources. The danger with a government is when it works in silos. It can't be correct that when the department, we can talk about putting pressure on the legislation on mine health and safety, but it cannot be if it doesn't address your health concerns. So we should be able to say, as soon as that legislation is brought into being, because of the health implications beyond underground mining, there has to be a way where the Department of Health must also be able to make the contribution on what it thinks will be the better measurements to deal with occupational health diseases. I think, to me, in as much as the primary responsibility will lie with Mineral Resources and energy, there should be an input, because at the end of the day, the consequences of failure of legislation will also go back to health as a liability. So I think we will have to find a way of doing so. So I would say it should not be the last meeting. I know we have run many meetings, but thank you very much for the initiative that you have taken.
Your record chair does indicate that you have a good, you're a good leader, can summarize very well. And just now, I take this as an instruction to us. We will follow your lead. Yes, it will be resting with you, but as held, we will not be far away from it. Colleagues, we are indicating that we will call you again. We have not exhausted, as Honorable Wilson did indicate, your annual performance plan. We need to look into it. At least we appreciate we have a copy. There may just be other questions that will come accompanying this. So the office will indicate how soon we need you to come back. Thank you very much. We will not be able to stay beyond this. For those who are interested to stay on, and media, we have another very important presentation coming in now. Presentation on the occupational, on the Office of the Health Standard Compliance. How do we get our clinics and hospitals compliant? We thank Honorable Lucy for the whole committee of Mineral Resources and Energy for being part of us, and you are released, comrades and leaders, to leave.